from Land Grant Brewing Company, Columbus, Ohio.
Right in front, too.
Just make sure to get a bunch of spittle, like all over the mic.
Yeah, I'm good at that.
Oh, that's good.
Did you like that? Were you recording that one?
Yeah.
Land Grant Brewing presents Land Grant University Beers with the Brewers.
Welcome to this week's episode of Beer with the Brewers here at Land Grant Brewing Company. I'm Mark Richards, emceeing this week. Joining us today are Brewers Chris Helderman and Dan Schaefer. Hi, guys.
How we doing?
Yo.
Very honored today to have with us a special guest from 97.1 The Fan, T-Bone. How's it going this morning?
Long-time caller, first-time listener. Thank you guys very much for having me. I am super stoked to be here. I'm sure we'll give the phone number out at some point for everybody to call in and get their questions in, their hot takes. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, right on.
Hot takes.
Right on. Well, thanks thanks for joining us. Rolling into the beer this week that we're featuring is 97.1 The Beer, that is kind of a partnership collaboration that we've done. Quick hits on the taste of this beer is going to be it's light and refreshing, crisp, and it tastes like beer.
Yay.
So. Suggested pairings, maybe chorizo tacos with fried potatoes this week and ground beef chili topped with Fritos. I think the common drive-through taco might go quite well with this late at night, too, if anybody knows what I'm talking about there.
Can I stop and ask a question? Am I allowed to ask
questions? Yes, that's why we got you here.
Encourage.
So you guys, a lot of beers, a lot of wines, they do tasting pairings. Where do you guys kind of come up with that? Like, is that based on flavor profile of some of the ingredients? Because I'm always curious when, like, I go to a restaurant and they're like, oh, yeah, like, the ones that have, like, their food matched to some of their own brews that they might do, and they say, oh, yeah, if you like this, you should pair it with this beer. Where do you guys typically come up with that, or how does that typically come up? Or is it just, I ate that once, I put it with that beer, tasted good, let's go that route.
Sometimes it's, I ate that once, it tasted good, we'll do that. There are some very derivative ones that if they're spicy food and you want to taste more spice, you get a hoppy beer. If it's a spicy food and you need to calm that down, you get a malty beer. Dan might be able to go into further detail on some of those.
I think there's some parallels with wine, where it's just very generic light beers with fish and chicken, dark beers with darker, you know, chili, red meat. Then you got weird stuff that sort of gets thrown in, like hops and fruit that...
There's not a lot of, like, hoppy profile in food, right? I mean, that's kind of why you drink that beer, because it has that extra something to it. So that's where I'm always curious, where it's like, oh, yeah, hoppy beer goes well with this food. It's like, I didn't know that. You know, I'm always fine that they're usually right when I do take their recommendations. It's like, oh, yeah, it does work out well. But I'm always curious how you guys come up with that type of stuff.
I have been looking at some recommendations on craftbeer.com. They have a lot of really excellent pairing combinations. I did have to look up a lot of stuff for IPA, because, I mean, I have it with food all the time, but I don't necessarily consider, it's like, oh, I think this would be really great with this, just because it's an IPA.
Right. But
there were some good recommendations on there that I have taken into account.
Obviously, like a chocolate stout, it's like, all right, well, we get, that's probably, like, you know, that's easier, right, though, right. I would assume?
Like, yeah, if there's food in it, or food-like products, generally, you got a one-to-one there.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think even occasionally, just as a taco joke, is pretty good pairing, too.
There you go.
Absolutely.
So upcoming events that we have at Land Grant, probably the biggest thing we've got going on right now, actually is very related to your field of work, T-Bone, is March Madness. We will have our tap room open at 11:30. Ray Ray's is doing $13, gets you 3 ribs, 6 wings, and a big old waffle fry, which are pretty tasty, full-time throughout these tournaments. That pretty much sums up what we've got going on this episode, the history of this premium lager we're drinking today, 97.1 The Beer.
BJCP, they don't really have any guidelines for premium lager, so I just went with the American lager. Commercial examples are going to be your Budweiser, Coors Original, Grain Belt Premium Lager, which is actually fantastic from Minneapolis. It's one of my favorite beers. Miller High Life and things of the like. Think about all those. Flavor profile, you should be getting relatively neutral palate with a crisp and dry finish and a moderately low grainy or corn-like flavor. Could be perceived as sweetness. Very little hop character at all. Hop bitterness would be low to medium. And it should have a very, very clean fermentation character. There should be no off flavors. I guess it is slightly to style to have, or can be acceptable to have, some DMS, which tastes like cream corn. Ours does not have that, thankfully. But that is a common flavor you get. There should really not be any aroma. Nothing really popping out at you. Everything should be subdued, but pretty well balanced. Yeah, it should be 4.2 to 5.3% ABV, 8 to 18 IBUs. Seasonality, you're drinking this all year long, and you can drink it pretty much all day long, too.
Me? I'm doing that?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know I could, but now.
That is one of the beauties of it, is it is a low-alcohol beer, meaning you're not getting schmammered off of one or two. And like we said, some nice canned chili with some Fritos on top of that will be amazing.
Maybe a little, like, walking taco. Oh, you ever had those, the like high school football game, the walking taco?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, take the chili and the cheese, put it over the Fritos. I love that. It's like my favorite thing.
Yes.
And then I burn my hand because the bag's not really made for that type of heat. And then it just, I don't care. It's gone before it hurts, so it's good.
We need to get Frito in on that insulated bag idea so we can really, really get it done.
They're like, but these are not cold or hot. We're like, just trust us. Trust me. It works. It's good.
It's all worth the money. We promise.
That's right.
I think it's kind of has an interesting history. We'll go through some of it, not all of it, of course. Back in the mid to late 1800s, German immigrants have been brewing, German-inspired lagers. This style was heavily influenced by Prohibition, World War II, and just not having the ingredients that they wanted from Germany, either quality or quantity. So they started using adjuncts, being other fermentables, corn, rice, things of that nature, because they couldn't get the quantity or quality of barley they wanted, like they had in Germany. So they started experimenting, and turns out they liked it. It performed well. I thought an interesting fact, 1900 to 1913, beer production increased by over 1 billion gallons in the United States.
Wow.
It is a billion with a B. Promptly 7 years later, they said no more beer. That was Prohibition, January 17th, 1920.
Yes. Well, I have a question for you guys, kind of related to this, now that we're talking about Prohibition. I know some of the bigger beer companies, and I guess some of the microbrews, have done like Prohibition-style lager, or I have friends who have told me like they thought that meant non-alcoholic because they thought Prohibition-style meant in Prohibition you couldn't have alcohol. That's not what it is, right? Like, Prohibition-style lagers are still alcoholic beers. They're just recipes that come from that time, or what? I know I'm putting you guys on the spot here, but do you know, like, what the difference is, or is that just a marketing thing?
Marketing thing, but also, I mean, I think there is, there's no sort of recognized style for, like, a pre-Prohibition lager.
Like, is it vastly different than what we drink now? Did they, like... No. I put an octopus in it beforehand, and now they outlawed that. Like, what's is there something vastly different that we're missing? Or
I looked into that a little bit. I think that before Prohibition, there would have been higher ABV, They might have used less adjunct than they do now. It's up to 50% corn and rice, right?
I think it's over 40.
So
either way, it's up there.
They would have used. It would have been more full-bodied, probably hoppier, more like what we consider a craft beer.
Okay. So when you see that, there's not like, it's just not total BS. There's a little something there.
No. Okay. I've noticed a lot more specialty malts in those just from tasting it. I know there's a decent amount of Vienna, which has a very distinct taste, and probably some Munich specialty malts that I've noticed in tasting those pre-Prohibition lagers.
Octopus. I mean, maybe it could come back, but you get that on the pilot system. Turn that out in about 3 months. Look for that one coming.
I do think that's one of the big thing that we lost in all of this consolidation is that there were all these little regional breweries that were making beers like this. And today, we've got the mega breweries. So we are like, they all kind of taste the same, but we don't know what they used to taste like, because I know when I was in Buffalo, there was Iroquois that had shut down a long time ago. Yeah, we just don't know what all of these little breweries, what their American Light Lager tasted like.
Well, you'd have to think, too, like, I mean, look at, like, pizza places, right? You have Columbus-style pizza, you go to Chicago, and I know deep dish is not all they do in Chicago, but, like, they have their way of doing it. New York has their way. On the West Coast, there's I assume beer would have been the same thing. Even if it was just a basic lager, it would still be like, oh, well, we have this, you know, this type of grain that we use, it's a little different. Or maybe they started brewing it, you know, a little differently where it had a more full-bodied taste maybe in one part of the country than the other. So it would be cool to go back in time and get like 20 of those beers from all over the country. Oops, as I hit the microphone like a professional. But it would have been cool to stack all those together and see they're probably, you're right, there probably was like variations of flavor that we don't get as much now from the macro breweries. Right. You get it from the micro brews still, but... Or the craft brews, I should say.
When you get that from Europe, that's how we have all these different styles, you know, German Pilsner, Czech Pilsner, you know, Bohemian Pilsner.
Right.
I mean, they're all similar, but they're all very distinct in their own right. Those are all just different regions that they're brewed at. So, yeah, speaking of that consolidation and everything, so during Prohibition, there's not many breweries that survived Prohibition. Yingling, they survived. They made ice cream when they were not brewing beer. Coors started making ceramics. I forget what Budweiser did. I mean, they all did something else to keep their factories, their workers open, and to keep the money flowing. But, yeah, then 13 years later, Prohibition ended. And so they started brewing beer again. Started brewing, and then World War II hit not too long after that. You couldn't get the grain that they wanted. There's a lot of shortages and everything. So that's when recipes changed again. And really, after World War II, everyone was set on these recipes like, oh, this is what Budweiser tastes like. So Budweiser's not changing. You know, Budweiser uses rice. Miller uses corn. I think Coors uses corn. Fun fact, Budweiser actually pays a lot more to use rice than corn. So everyone's like, oh, they're just doing it because they're cheap. No, they actually want to do it. They could make it a lot cheaper than they do. So that is where we have today's American lager. It basically came because of World War II, Prohibition, everything else. The big macro breweries started advertising, this is what you should be drinking. And we said, oh, man, that is what I should be drinking. That's where we are today. There's a couple local breweries that mainly Four String. They do a Hilltop Lager.
Been available for a while.
Yeah. I think it's pretty pretty solid beer. I've bought some, which is rare for me to buy six packs of beers, but I do, and I enjoy it. And other people, I think they're the only ones that have it year round. 97.1 the beer was kind of based off of Coors Original. That's one of my favorite macro beers. They're tasty.
Yeah, not the Coors Light though. You got to get the old school banquet beer.
Yeah,
yeah. Banquet beer. That's where it's at. Talk about classy. Your food pairings. It's even named for it.
Yeah, one thing you'll learn about me. I'm a pretty classy guy. I drink the banquet beer and also the champagne of beers. So yeah, I try to keep it classy.
Oh, I got my introduction to the champagne of beers was on a trip on a crew soccer trip up to Toronto. Guy I was sitting with in the bus brought a warm 12-pack of long necks, and we just drank them. I think we had them all gone before we got up to the state line up at 6 in the morning. I think we were completely toasted. And you know what? Warm, even. I didn't mind it. It was all right. Yeah. Like, I'll drink about anything, but I do especially like this beer because it has a lot of those characteristics, but you guys made it with your own little flavor to it, which I like. So
thank you. All right, go down some of the beer stats for this beer. ABV 4.0. IBUs are 10. There's only one hop in it, Liberty Hop, put in at the beginning of the boil. So just for some slight bittering, Pilsner malt, we use flaked corn and flaked rice and a little Munich, a little more malt character to it. I think it gives some good stuff on the nose and on the aroma.
So this was your baby. So what was behind the decision to do the rice and the corn?
So I really like Miller products and how they have that corny sweetness at the end. I think it's a great finish, but sometimes they can get a little heavy. Whereas Budweiser, I'm not the biggest fan of, but they have a crisp, clean finish. I really like that rice. So I was like, hey, why don't we put both of them together and see what we get? We put both of them together, and we've got 97.1 the beer. And I think it turned out pretty much just like I wanted it to, which is exciting, to say the least. We use a Pilsner malt, which is more expensive. It's one of the most expensive malts we do as far as base malts. You know, our quote-unquote cheap beer uses pretty expensive ingredients.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as you mentioned, flaked corn and flaked rice are actually more expensive than malt. Yes. So it's not just for cheapness.
To that point, like I always, I guess, when I think of Budweiser, I think of like not a cheap beer. It's not Natty Light. But like that's something that I get is probably lost on people, right? That yeah. Budweiser can do that, like you said about the rice, probably because they have a gajillion pounds of rice that they're buying. So in bulk, they probably it's probably not as expensive as it is for you guys when you just have to get a little bit. Like, they probably get a way better deal on it. Something I guess you wouldn't, I wouldn't have thought of is that this would still be more of an expensive type of beer to produce, even if it isn't, you know, thought of as like being one of the craziest ingredient beers in the world, right?
Yeah.
Not to mention the lagering time. So, it's, you know, sitting in a tank physically longer than our other beers. So,
how long does it have to lager?
So, traditionally, I think it's 6 weeks for a lager. Shorten that up a bit to try and push them out faster, and we've seen no ill effects, so it's been exciting.
We try to do a ramped up fermentation where we start low and bump it up gradually. It sort of mitigates all the nasty things that are caused by fermenting at a low temperature, so we don't necessarily have to lager as long to get rid of them.
Yeah, and as light and clean as this beer finishes, it's really hard to hide any off flavors. So it really shows in the finished product what your process is like, and really a true testament to that turning out a clean beer.
Yeah, yeah, it is one of the hardest beers to brew, which is also exciting that it turned out pretty well, I think. Whenever I go to a new brewery, I drink the lightest thing they have because you know what's going on.
Really? So that's when you go to a new place, that's what you try to do? Is
always.
How well they did that? So, see, I have the same thing with chicken tenders when I go to a new... No. Go to a new restaurant. If you screw up the chicken tenders, you can't do anything
else. Me, your finest tenders, sir. I think we do that. We tend to pick like a light lager, and usually you try someone's light lager and their IPA, and you get a pretty good indication of what type of a brewer they are.
Interesting. Right. See, that's... I'm learning something. This is great.
That doesn't necessarily mean they can't do other things well, or that they some of their other beer, like if those are bad, that the other ones aren't going to be good. But it's just
a good
get
benchmark.
A good overflow.
Yeah, a good indicator of how versatile they are. Maybe if they hit those two, then they can probably do other styles that are a little more nuanced.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. And this beer is available at Giant Eagles, just about all of them, I think, in the greater Columbus area. Also available here in our tap room, both in takeaway six packs. And to have one here at the brewery, which I think proved last night, right, T-Bone?
Yeah, I was here pretty late last night, and I saw tons of cans sitting around on the tables because I think a lot of people just put them down. So, but if I'm going to get, that's why I love Land Grant too, is because you guys only do cans, which I think that's the way all beer should be. Is only if you, I want it in a can. It's like a mini keg, so I prefer it.
That's not bad,
right? Isn't that true though? The bottles, like, I mean, when companies do bottles, like, you do expose it to light, and that can actually eventually be bad if you know, enough cycles of light get to it, it can make it bad, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the UV light hits a hop compound in the hops and breaks it apart. And
mercaptan or something?
Yeah. I don't remember the technical name.
Yeah.
But it breaks apart, and then one part smells like skunk, the other part doesn't smell like anything. Yeah, so you can actually test that. If you go out with a hoppy beer in the sun, it takes a matter of minutes.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're familiar with hitting old Pepe Le Pew on the road, it's this very, very similar smell. Yeah.
Wow. I think canning got a bad rap because up until recently, getting the equipment to do it on a small scale wasn't available. So it was only the macro places that could do canning.
Right.
But in terms of freshness of product, it is a superior vessel to a bottle.
Yeah, and quality of packaging materials as well, and that lining is greatly improved since I started drinking canned beer.
Yeah. Well, that, and I think for me, it's just the pure spectacle of seeing a bunch of empty cans sitting around after you're done drinking. It's like, yes, I accomplished something today.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I get, even though it's the same amount, I don't get the same feel from a bottle. It feels like, I don't know, I feel like I got a lot of breakable stuff and I get nervous. Like, cans, I don't have to worry about being clumsy, just knocking stuff over. It's all right.
You just throw those cans on the floor, stomp on them, it's fine.
Yeah, the stomping is a great, especially tailgating. That's like cathartic. You just stomp on a can, it's great.
You can't, or at least shouldn't, crush a glass of beer over your head. You, and that you can also do at the end of a six pack. Moving along to the tasting portion. Once again, this is available at all Greater Columbus Giant Eagles here in the Land Grant Tap Room. And actually, we've got some events over at the Walrus with 97.1 as well. Keep your eyes peeled on the Walrus. Might be able to get another taste of it over there with some competitions they have going on with March Madness.
Something you get on these beers, because they are so light sometimes, is the acetaldehyde, the sort of green apple thing. It's an intermediary for yeast in the process of making alcohol. And if you don't lager them long enough, or if you don't get a proper fermentation, you tend to get that from the yeast, and you don't get any of that in this at all, which I really dig. And I think the corn definitely pops on this too, which I also dig.
There you go. Did it just for you, Dan.
Thanks.
We're all just drinking the beer now, which is my favorite part of the podcast. And any work day, really. So you can drink a beer before noon. It's a good day.
Very good day. Now, like I said earlier, one of the things I like about this style of beer, and particularly this one, is you can just drink it. You don't get tired of it. It's, you know, you drink three IPAs. Maybe your tongue's a little tired from all those hops or something. You don't get tired from this, which I think is why this style is so popular, too. Everybody can drink it.
I feel like I know there's not a ton of bitterness to this, but I do feel like it's got a little bit more, just slightly more hop profile than like what you get with the macros, which I know you said you guys were kind of going for. For me, I'm more of a malt guy than a hops guy. If that's not that's the proper dichotomy for all beers, there are like a million directions you go, but since that seems to be where the American beer market tends to focus one way or the other. But I do like hoppy beers. It usually takes me a little time to get warmed up to them as I'm drinking. So I also like this beer, particularly here in the tap room, because you guys have so many different beers. Get a few of these in, it kind of gets me ready then to get into the like more hoppy beers and kind of, I don't know, I think it makes them taste better. I know some guys can just jump right into like a Bodie or a double IPA of, you know, whatever the furthest IPA you can get now. But for the lightweights like me, I got to work my way into them. And this is a nice little way to get started if you're going down that path, at least for me.
But yeah, definitely.
It's nice that, you know, I don't think you're going to see anyone like with their nose jammed into a tulip contemplating this beer. But no.
Although we're doing that right now.
Well, as he says that, I'm trying to do it. And you don't get a ton. You get the grainy sweetness in the aroma. Because I know it's there, I get some Munich. But you, if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't get it. I mean, it's, yeah, there's not a whole lot going on as far as, you know, big flavors punching you in the face.
Well, but that's a good point too, right? The hoppiness of beers, I didn't realize that till recently, is a lot of that is from your nose, right? Like when you taste hops, you're really smelling the hops, and that's kind of the whole experience, right? So with this not being as hoppy of a beer, that's kind of the point, is you're not going to smell it, you're not going to like have that much of that hitting you in the face. I guess
just focus on drinking.
It's part of being in radio. That's how we got there, was we all focused on drinking too much and we ended up in radio.
I think it's a foregone conclusion, but where does this rank on the crushability index, gentlemen?
I believe 5 is a pretty safe bet on this.
Yes, yeah. 5 for me.
They come in a 6-pack, and I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying 6 again, but I don't think you can not finish that 6-pack.
That's right.
I'm going to say 5, and then you got that one left over for the next morning.
Oh, clearly. Look at that. Hair of the dog.
a little something while you cook your steak and eggs.
That's a good idea.
Maybe a nice T-bone with some eggs. I think it'd be great.
Foreshadowing. Or not.
Yeah, today's crushability, I have not been tasting this because I finished mine before I introduced our esteemed guest T-Bone today.
I was going to ask if anyone had any Ray Ray's suggestions for this beer.
3 ribs, 6 wings, and a pile of waffle fries.
That's a great idea.
I was going to mention the ribs as well. I don't think the ribs have gotten any love on our recommendations as of yet.
I really like the fries with their spicy aioli. Is that what it is? I would just be eating fries and that aioli and crushing these.
I want to say how much I enjoy the fact that Chris, the chemist, one of the brewmasters, is like, yes, Munich hops or Munich malts and this hops and this that. What do you call this aioli again? I've never heard of it. Is this a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? You said okay.
The best with the fries is too, if you get the brisket or the pulled pork, right. You take 2 of them and you make yourself a tiny sandwich.
That's a brilliant idea.
There you go.
Yeah, why has someone not done, like, that seems like something that you will see on a commercial at Arby's eventually. Like, Ving Rhames is going to be doing, like, we have the meats, and it's just little tiny fry sandwiches. It's a great idea.
I can imagine pretty soon there's going to be the infomercial of get your own waffle sandwich maker. Yeah, now somehow. The low introductory price of $19.99.
But just wait.
It'll be wait, some you dad. Can get 2. It's like, don't you hate when you're making your tiny waffle sandwich for your kids? But all the pieces are all over the place. Now in one convenient way. And the guy's like, clumsily.
It fell apart.
No more. And then it'll be, I don't know, Slap Chop guy or something. Is he still around? That crazy, the ShamWow guy?
I think he went to jail for something.
I know, I think you're right.
I don't know why.
He had a little problem with the nose candy, but I'm sure he's
what
bounced
a shock.
Back.
Yeah, really. What a shock. Yeah. So tiny waffle fry sandwiches coming to a store near you.
Yes. Most likely Arby's.
There you go.
Chicken tender tacos. What about that? You mentioned chicken tenders, the true
why
test.
Not?
Yeah,
let's
why not?
Actually
just anything.
Put them in some hot sauce. Like, let's just get all the flavors together. Let's just combine all the cuisines into one. Isn't that what KFC tried to do with their famous bowl? They were like, we have everything in the restaurant just in this bowl. Just there you go.
I see no problem with this.
I think next podcast maybe would be Quadrahopic IPA. Is this right?
This is correct.
Oh, yes.
That will already be out and in stores by the time you hear the next podcast. So back to the hops.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking forward to that, too.
Should be. It's pretty citrusy IPA. It's exciting.
T-Bone, we cannot express enough our appreciation to have someone's voice other than our own on this podcast, and especially a professional like you.
Well, I'm just glad to say that 97.1 the beer happened before 95.5 Sunny the beer happened, or whatever they are. Sunny 95 the beer happened. So, no, thank you guys very much for doing this. We love the partnership with you guys and love the beers. It's a natural thing because I've been over here plenty of times to drink your beer. So now, and I bought it in stores. So the fact that we get to do this again with 97.1 the beer, very excited about it. And yeah, definitely everyone who's listening to this, who will then bug me later and say, hey, where do I get this beer? Giant Eagle, Land Grant Tap Room, come get it. Because there's only so much of it, and we will drink all of it. So someone will drink all of it. It will be gone.
We've already started.
Yeah, we had a good start on it last night, and we're going to get more in today. And then got basketball coming up this weekend. So, yeah, make sure you get it before it's gone.
Right on. All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot, T-Bone. Chris, Dan, thanks a lot for all the insights on this beer this week. Getting together again next week to talk about Quadrahopic IPA.
Excellent. Thanks, everyone.
Out.
So dank.